sea level. So I took the kind of experimental experimental approach to this talk, and I took it to heart the fact that we're brainstorming ideas and that we're presenting projects that are not completed yet. So what I've done here, literally, is exposed one of my lab notebooks. I make all my students write the lab notebook as they kind of learn new technologies and explore data. And I myself write lab notebooks that often end up being tutorials and documentation, internal documentation. So I've exposed one of these notebooks to you, and I'm going to try to do a presentation off of a live IPython notebook that's on my server. So let's see how that works. It's the first time I'm trying it. So the title of the talk is called the System Administrator Syndrome, which I will explain shortly towards the end of the talk. Book piracy as peer preservation. So first of all, what is it? What am I talking about? For the past year, I've been collecting data on Aleph. That's not its real name, but let's call it Aleph. And Aleph is one of the world's largest online book sharing communities. I suspect many of you use this site regularly instead of going to the library. I suspect some of you purposefully pirate your own books to make sure that they get a larger global audience. Despite its prominence in our community, there's very little work done on Aleph in general. Aleph contains 1 million plus books, mostly academic, mostly in English. And I have kind of descriptive stuff on this as well. 16 plus terabytes archive of full text. I do have the full archive on my server. It's kind of, it gets interesting once you start working with data like that. And one of the most remarkable things for me, and when I give this talk to our librarians and to the American Association of Book Publishers, they do this on a $1,500 per year annual budget. The only people who are bigger than them are Google Books, with a different budget, as you could imagine. So what exactly is Aleph? Now, it's a site, right? You go, you search for books, you download PDFs, but Aleph is much more than just a site, it's a community, right? And here I try to kind of organize my thoughts or organize the ecosystem of Aleph in general. And I think I pretty much got it down to these kind of three pillars. First of all, there is a server, right? There's some infrastructure, there's some architecture. There's server, there are files, there's hardware, there's software that's serving up pages, serving up PDFs, right? Make sense? Second, there is a structure of governance, right? There is a forum, people are hanging out, they're talking, they're collecting books, they're discussing books, right? So there's a forum, there's a social structure. So you have the hardware, you have the peopleware, right? And then there's the archive. There's the texts themselves, right? The PDFs, the EPUBs, and so on. So you have hardware, peopleware, and text. I'm going to skip the details of the diagram, but getting a good picture, getting a good image of that community took me quite a while. The technology, so technology, people, and text. If you're studying technology, people, and text, it's something that I'm increasingly describing my work as, that I study technology, people, and text, something at the intersection of those three. And I think this community is a good illustration. When you do that, I think an approach that comes naturally is a mixed methods approach, right? It's very likely that you'll be doing a little bit of just description of the architecture. I'm interested, and I have started doing field work and interviews. I have computational work where I am scraping the forums where these people hang out and analyzing a conversation. And I'm looking at the archive itself, right? What is being pirated? Where is it going? Where is it coming from? These kind of questions. So it's three-dimensional mixed methods approach in general. The tech, the technology, the architecture is somewhat visible. It did take some detective work to uncover exactly what servers they're running and how they set it up. So, and I have a lot to say about it, but I'm gonna skip it for now because it's, the texts are visible. You can actually download the whole archive of Aleph as kind of as a release, the whole terabytes of data. So the tech and text are relatively visible, right? The social dynamics of piracy, of book piracy in particular, are less visible, right? The university is understandably reluctant to share data on their students and faculty. This is not something that is discussed very often in public, and very little data is collected on book piracy, partly because there's less money in book piracy than games, for example, or music or film. So part of the problem that I tried to resolve in this project was to get at the social dynamics of book piracy, right? And my solution, oops, it's not doing smooth scrolling. My solution was to visit the forums where the collecting and the sharing activity happens, and to scrape them regularly, and to collect a large data set on the social activity on the forum. The model is fairly simple. There is a seeder, there is somebody who releases a book, right, into the wild, releases a new book. There are fairly complicated rules by which that book makes it into the archive of Aleph. And then on the forum, people answer the seeder. We can call them leechers in the torrent. Torrent speak, we'll call them leechers. They're downloaders. They're just kind of somewhat passively downloading books. They're not actively pirating or sharing books. Does that make sense? When a person responds to another person on the forum, we draw a connection between them, right? It's at least, it's a model to make the dynamics of piracy visible, the social dynamics of piracy visible. 90%, you probably heard this maxim, that 90% of data analysis is collecting and cleaning it up. So my 90% involved setting up a regular scrape pipeline. I'm now somewhat a specialist in scraping forums of all kinds, and other projects are growing from this. For example, working with Ed Finn from Arizona State, I'm looking at book clubs, online book clubs, and book discussion in online forums. Mostly I use Scrapy, Python Scrapy framework, Pandas to clean stuff. You clean, you normalize. It's somewhat tedious work. Unicode problems. Aleph is based in Eastern Europe. Most of natural language processing tools are English centric. You will have, if you're working on not English decks, you will have Unicode problems. Come speak to me if you have Unicode problems. Finally, after some period of data collection, you have a nice data structure, and you can, the fun work can begin, the 10% where all the stuff happens. And I'm gonna try to do something here. This is, by the way, like I said, it's IPython notebook. It is live code connected to live data. So I'm going to show you the data structure. So let's see. And it's gonna take just a little bit of time because toolbar went away. Let's see. I'm going to evaluate this cell. Okay. So it's going to take some time. So while that's going, let me talk about my favorite guy of late, which is John Tukey. So John Tukey, who has heard of John Tukey before? He's the founder of, he was one of the creators of S, the programming language F, which is the precursor to the programming language R. And he was also an avid advocate of something that he calls exploratory data analysis. Exploratory data analysis, Tukey thought that statisticians spend too much time confirming hypotheses, and they don't have kind of a regularized way to actually form hypotheses and intuitions, right? And his idea was exploratory data analysis, was to look at data, eyeball data, and to begin to form intuitions about the data. Let me see, why is this not running? Try this again. Well, I think exploratory data analysis, that's the cover of his book from 1970 something or other, exploratory data analysis, I think, is a very good fit as a methodology for the humanities. I think network analysis in general is an excellent exploratory tool and maybe not so great as a confirmation tool. And we can talk about that when there's a question and answer period. I think we all could relate. So far, all the projects have that problem, have that tension between exploration and confirmation. So let's talk about that. Network analysis will solve all your problems, right? Here's a kind of an experimental, this is experimental network analysis. What you see here are two networks before they're laid out in Gephi. It's just nodes and edges. They're meaningless, more or less, right? We were just talking before the start that the layout algorithms that you saw, everybody use some sort of layout algorithms. They seem to be spatial. They seem to indicate distance, but they're actually random. Every time you run a layout algorithm, the clustering turns out slightly different. The distance turns out to be slightly different, right? So again, that's something we should talk about, right? The stochastic nature of these layout algorithms. Let me do a little interlude. Interlude about the first hacker, who was Gideon from the Bible, from the Old Testament. Gideon was the first hacker. Gideon, if you remember, he was supposed to take out, he was one of these kind of figures that was supposed to lead the nation of Israel from the oppression by the Mennonites, or one of those, in some stage. An angel of God came to Gideon, and Gideon, his name literally means hacker, or hacker of wood. He hacks things, he slices things. Gideon listened to the angel. Angel asked him to lead the nation of Israel, and Gideon kind of didn't believe him, and he asked the angel to perform a miracle, and the angel performed a miracle. He set some stuff on fire. It was meat and soup, but the angel asked for the soup to be emptied first, which is weird, because if you think about it, it's liquid, right? So you wanted a drier substance to burn. So Gideon was suspicious, and he asked for another miracle. He asked for the miracle of the fleece. He asked God to collect, now this time God directly, not an angel, to collect all the dew on the fleece overnight and to leave the rest of the grass dry. And sure enough, in the morning, all the dew collected on the fleece and the rest of the grass was dry, which you'd think would be quite a miracle, but Gideon was still suspicious, because how do you know that that's not how dew works anyway, right? It could be that if you leave out the fleece overnight, the dew would always collect there, right? So Gideon asked for another miracle, and he said, this time make the dew collect on the grass and not on the fleece, right? And here you have the birth of experimental method, right? Experimental comparative method. Gideon, by kind of slicing time, by hacking through time, Gideon actually gets confirmation that indeed he is the chosen one. Interlude over, binning and slicing. So I've collected a bunch of data, and I drew it up like this. Where is it? So I laid it out nicely, but still it's a mess of data. We have about, let me see I'm jumping around. The scrolling is not smooth here. No, we didn't. But we have about 500,000 nodes and edges. So the graph is huge, and it's a mess, and it doesn't really tell you much unless you have some way to bin it, to hack it, to slice it into time frames, all right? So my solution to this mass of data was to slice by time. And as I explore these slices, I think of myself less of a scientist and more of a kind of comparative zoologist, I would say. You encounter life forms and you try to explain what these life forms mean. Here's I binned the data by year. So here's the first year of existence of Aleph, the community, and you literally you see how many 20 people or something talking to each other and sharing the first books. So each one of those nodes represents a person, and they're talking to each other. Each edge represents them being in the same thread, all right? So that's Aleph in 2005. Aleph in 2006 is growing, right? You have certain people emerge as clear leaders of that community. They're the ones who are doing most of the talking and the sharing, right? They're also, if you're looking at the governance structures, they're the ones who are making the important decisions about which hardware to purchase, which software to develop, and so on, right? You see a leadership structure emerge in the community. This is Aleph in 2007. Let me see if I can, I'm sorry about the choppiness. This is Aleph in 2007. Also note that these are actually proportionately sized. So you see the same governance structure, the kind of the people who are doing most of the sharing and making most of the decisions, they're becoming even more prominent in the community, right? That's what we see in 2007. And you have just the growth of the community. Lots and lots of other people are coming in and participating. In 2008, the slices become again meaningless to me. It's just too much. This is just a small snapshot. This is a zoom in of the larger network. The people who are the leaders of the community, they're growing even more. They're participating even more. And there are even more people who are just coming in for one download or something like that, one comment in the forum. Does that make sense? I've done, so that was 2008. In 2009, I did something different. Again, sorry, like I said, it's a little bit experimental. No smooth scrolling, come on. I do scroll just a little bit. Sorry, one second, let me get this guy into view. In 2009, I took the same network and I just cut out all the nodes with a degree of less than 10, which means all the kind of casuals, we just cut them out of the graph. And the results are striking. There are from 35,000 nodes, only 7 are left. Only 7 participate more than 10 times per year, and only 12 edges are selected when you do that. So what looked initially like a wild growth of the community is actually kind of the same core group that was there in the beginning, more or less, with some new members. But most of participation is being driven by the same people. So I think that's an interesting finding. I have kind of more math about it, but I think it's clearly visible here. Some intuitions here. This is the exploration, right? This is the exploration, some intuition. First of all, I was quite influenced by reading Yochai Benkler and by talking to Benkler and the Berkman team around cooperation. Benkler writes about peer production. Peer production is producing shared goods in self-organizing distributed way, okay? Peer production, Aleph as a community, Aleph, if you imagine Aleph as a library, if you imagine the people who are participating as kind of librarians and patrons, that is a shared good, right? They're trying to increase, these are often people from India, from China, from Russia, who are trying to make information available locally, right? So definitely a strong sense of shared good. It's self-organizing, there's no official structure, right? They don't have funding from the government, and it's distributed. So it's kind of exactly set mainline definition for peer production, all right? However, this is slightly different. You have, imagine a collecting activity, any collecting activity. Imagine what librarians do, is that librarians have this dual role, right? They collect, they make accessible, but they also protect. Derrida wrote about this in an essay, An Archive Fever, right, is that the protectors of the library, they collect and make accessible, but at the same time preserve, right? At the same time actually block people, right? You can look at this book, but don't touch it, right? That's the kind of librarian archivist impulse. Therefore, what I think we're seeing here, and I think many similar communities tend towards this model, what we see is not just peer production, but peer preservation. And peer preservation, I think, can be kind of formalized as sysadmin syndrome. Sysadmin, if you have ever met a system administrator, their job is to protect the system, right? They're kind of slightly angry at people who are all potential security risks, right? Librarians can be like that sometimes as well, right? You're all potentially can be a security risk, or you could somehow mess up the archive. Now, another interesting intuition that I got from this data is that as the value of the common shared good grows, right, so do the barriers to participation. That's the sysadmin syndrome. So initially, in the early stages of the project, you have very low barriers of participation. There are no rules. Everybody just shares openly, shares books openly. But as the value grows, it becomes very expensive to expose the archive to just kind of casuals, right? And therefore, you have governance that you have barriers to entry that arise. Now, at this stage, it's only an intuition. And what I would like to do in the future is to kind of continue exploring this and formalizing this further. But I suspect that you have this dynamic in other peer preservation communities like Wikipedia, Scratch, and similar. That's it for me.